Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. We have a loaded midweek show for you this week as Seth Mayhomer speaks to Jake Zivin of Apple TV ahead of this weekend's match. Andy Judd also will preview this weekend's match against Inter Miami, and I will give you a quick news update on all the transfer news and notes from the closing of the primary transfer window, which was yesterday, April 23rd. I'm Greg Johnstone. I'll be hosting today. And first, before we get to all of that, we want to tell you about our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your summer sports this season, from MLB, MLS, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, let's get into some news and notes as a follow-up from last weekend's show. First off, last week we talked about Idrizo Baba of Almeria. That transfer is now officially off. Hugo Cirizo of Ravello, who reported the rumor last week, reported on Monday night that there was a disagreement in negotiations and the deal was officially off. It had fallen through. On Tuesday, we got a little bit more context as Seth Mayhomer reported that the Revs learned of a sports hernia injury and that affected the transfer overall. Caleb Porter later said at his media availability that the deal did fall through because Baba failed his physical, and as a result, they did not go through with the transfer. So Baba seems like it was a big target for the Revolution. Officially off, he is not coming to the New England Revolution, and the Revs did not make a move for a midfielder in this window. One player who is coming to the Revs, though, is Javier Arriaga. He is coming over from the Seattle Sounders. The Revs, not a huge acquisition cost to get the center back. They are trading an international roster spot for 2025, as well as $75,000 in general allocation money if certain conditions are met. So a very, very low acquisition cost, and it doesn't impact the team in 2024, at least with the international roster spot. Arriaga was signed to the Sounders in 2019 as a designated player. He made over 100 appearances and 82 starts in the MLS regular season for the Sounders. He has 20 caps with the Ecuadorian national team. Currently on a TAM contract in 2023, made $750,000 in salary / total compensation. No difference between those numbers. So it is a very big expenditure for the New England Revolution. This is essentially a salary dump for Seattle, as he was not starting with the team. He actually made a blunder most recently in a game, I believe, against Vancouver last weekend. So this seems to be Seattle getting rid of a piece and doing a salary dump. But he's only 29 years old. Again, acquired as a designated player just a few years ago. And apparently Seattle has been shopping him for years, had interest throughout the league, including from Austin FC, according to some rumors. And apparently there was some negotiations for more of a, I'll say, legitimate fee instead of just a salary dump move last year. So there might be some value for the Revolution here. It's tough to say, but they do seem to be getting stronger at the center back position. One note is that we talked on Sunday about, last weekend with Tom Pinzone of who possibly could be on the trade block for the New England Revolution. We threw out Dave Romney, much to Tom's chagrin. Well, it was reported by Tom Bogart of The Athletic that Dave Romney was available for the New England Revolution this transfer window. Wasn't moved this transfer window, so it'll be interesting to see if he goes in the summer. He's also on a TAM contract, I believe just over the TAM contract, around that $700,000 mark. So it'll be interesting to see if he is on his way out, but he certainly seems to be out of favor with the club and not in Caleb Porter's plans. One other move the Revs made before the closing of the primary transfer window, they signed Alias Ivicic, formerly of the Portland Timbers. He was waived by the Timbers in March of this year. He previously had a contract with the Timbers through the 2025 season with a team option for 2026. Because he was waived, the Revolution were able to sign him to a minimum salary, and therefore he fits actually on the supplemental roster for the New England Revolution, so they're not using a senior roster spot, and it really doesn't impact their cap situation whatsoever. So it's basically a free player for the Revolution. Ivicic had a phenomenal 2022, but had some issues with Portland management in 2023. Certainly seemed to be a bit of a disruption in the locker room. And you may remember last year, after Georgi Petrovic was sold, he was on the Revolution's shortlist for keepers that could replace him. So now, full circle, he comes to New England basically on a free, no acquisition cost for the New England Revolution, on a minimum salary and fitting on the supplemental roster. As a result, the New England Revolution waived Jacob Jackson, their former first-round super draft pick from a few years ago. He was on the supplemental roster, so his spot is freed up to make room for Ivicic. A few other notes from Caleb Porter's media availability that I think is worth noting out. Porter said at his press that he expects to make more moves during the summer transfer window. He expects 3, 4, 5 moves. He said that's a direct quote. So he expects a little bit more flexibility. He also noted that the team was working with very, very little cap space and said they were basically had their hands tied and they were already at the cap going into the season. So they didn't have any room to work with. So it'll be interesting to see as time goes on if more resources are available to Porter. We talked a little bit on the podcast last weekend when you could really expect kind of a refresh or a rebuild. And it might be a situation where the Revolution are having some difficulties moving some contracts off of the roster, and they may need to wait until the end of the year for some contracts to end or some options to expire before they are able to kind of clear up some cap space. So those are just a couple of things to keep an eye on as the Revolution season goes on. And it's interesting to see if they will be more active in the summer, if they are able to get some people off the books. Very interesting all the way around. And now, without any further ado, I'm going to kick it over to Andy Judd.
Hey, everybody. It's Andy dropping back into the podcast to give you another Revolution pre-cap preview of this weekend's game. We're playing against, Inter-Miami. Okay, well, this will be quick. Miami's going to win. Miami's going to win. Messi might play. If he doesn't, I still think that Miami is going to win. End of analysis. Seriously, end of analysis. Like, I could sit here and talk to you about how Miami overperforms their expected goals at the third highest rate in the league. I could tell you about how the Revs underperform their expected goals at the fourth highest rate in the league. And I could tell you about how I think that those things are probably more due to skill than to luck. I could, or, you know, we could just watch either team play soccer in 2024. And I think we'd probably all come to the same conclusion, which is that Miami's going to win. Thank you for tuning in to another Revolution pre-cap preview. They won't all be like this. Back to you, Greg.
Thanks to Andy Judd for that extremely detailed preview of this weekend's game against Inter-Miami. He is second to none in his analysis, for sure. And now we'll kick it over to Seth Maycomber, who spoke to Jake Zivin of Apple TV.
All right, this is Seth Maycomber from the Blazing Musket. Happy to be joined once again by an Apple personality. This is a big one. It's Jake Zivin. That means it's Messi week in Foxborough. Jake, it's not about, listen, it's about you. Don't get me wrong. It's about you and Taylor. But
no.
It's also a little bit about Messi, right?
Oh, talk it's always me, about Messi.
Talk to me about, like, I've never seen Messi live in MLS. What's it like to see him? What's the atmosphere going to be like? Because 60,000, you're his best friend. What's it like to see Messi in person?
I'm not his best friend. I'm his best friend's best friend. Taylor is his best friend, I think, contractually. No, it's been really interesting, right? In seriousness. And it's different everywhere we go and everywhere he goes. And it's something we talk about a lot, just internally, kind of predicting in the lead up to the week, what's it going to be like at Arrowhead? What's the crowd going to look like? What's it going to look like in Gillette? What's it going to look like when he plays at Red Bull Arena, or he plays in Nashville, or wherever it is? Philly. Will Philly boo him? I mean, we were so excited for that Leagues Cup semifinal. We're like, we want the full on, the Philly fans that throw snowballs at Santa Claus. Like, come on out. Because this is the sixth game Messi's played, and it's this worldwide phenomenon. He's always a worldwide phenomenon. But, you know, specifically his start to his Inter Miami career in Leagues Cup was just incredible and capturing the attention of the world. And we're like, let's see what happens when he goes to Philly from a drama standpoint. Because we, of course, everybody wants kind of that drama. And it's been interesting. It's been different everywhere he's gone. A couple weeks ago at Arrowhead, it was a probably, you know, 2/3 or more pro Sporting Kansas City crowd, but everybody's still there to see him, right? And everybody understands, even the diehard Kansas City fans, and this weekend, the diehard Revolution fans still will understand that they're witnessing the greatest player of all time, arguably the greatest player of all time. So I think much in the same way that if you were watching Michael Jordan in his prime on the road and he did something spectacular, now maybe not if you're a Utah Jazz fan and he wins the NBA Finals on the final shot, but if it's just a regular season game and he goes for 50 or 45, yeah, you're going to be upset your team loses, but you're also going to appreciate that you were able to watch one of the greatest athletes in the history of sport play and do something special. And so I think you always see that when you go on the road. Some places like New York, when he played at Red Bull Arena last year, that was a pro mess. There were 25,000 people there to see Messi, and they're chanting his name the whole time. And the biggest cheers, at least for the, you know, until he came into the game, was when he got up off the bench to go warm up. And there's a game going on, and everybody's watching him in the corner warming up. That was the one extreme. And then I think more like when he comes on the road, it's kind of that people are there to see their team and cheer for their team, but also respecting Messi, and they can't help themselves when he scores a goal like he did in Arrowhead, and there's going to be cheers as well. So yeah, something we always look forward to seeing what the balance is going to look like. But it's Taylor has said this a lot. It's like Taylor Swift. Like, it feels that way when you're on the road and there's crowds just at the hotel and waiting for the team bus to come in. And it's this phenomenon, and it's not just the people watching around the world, right, on Apple TV. It's the people there in person. He is a phenomenon, and it's been very interesting to be along for the ride for the games that we have been.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, to me, he's the greatest player of all time. It's a rarity to see him play, let alone play in this league against one of your teams. And I wrote this article when he was announced saying that this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for MLS fan teams to say, hey, this is what we offer. The hope is that if you get 60,000 people into Gillette Stadium this weekend, they fall in love with Carlos Heel. Okay. Yes. Or they see a moment where Matt Polster puts a tackle in on Messi, and you can play that later on. I'm thinking back in the day, remember the moment where Jesse Marsh tackled David Beckham, and that became a moment that was remembered forever. So I think that that's what you hope, right? That you hope you have that similar moment, especially because there's this opportunity with Everett someday and moving into that stadium. That's a while away, but you kind of want to capture something like that, hopefully up at one point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I'm an opposing team in MLS, that is 1,000% my perspective. Chicago did it best of all the teams we saw last year. Now, Messi didn't play in that game, but you know, they went to Soldier Field. There were 60, 65,000 people there. And even though Messi was hurt and didn't make the trip, they still came. And there were still a lot of Inter Miami jerseys and Barcelona jerseys and Argentina jerseys. And the Fire played their best game in maybe a decade. I mean, decade is too long since Schweinsteiger and Nikolic and Dax McCarty led the Fire to the playoffs, whatever that year was, 2017, right? Like, since then, this was their best game. 4-2, they won. Shaqiri was fantastic. And for me, if I'm the Chicago Fire in that moment, I'm like, we capitalized perfectly on this. We got 60, 65,000 people in our building, and we put on the show, right? And hopefully some of them come back, and they did a ticket credit, you know, that I thought was very smart, a ticket credit thing, because Messi wasn't going to be there, that then you get a credit to a game next year. Again, you want to get people back into the building. So absolutely, if I'm the Revolution this week, you understand that you're getting 60, 65,000 because it's Messi coming and Miami coming, but you look at that as an opportunity. And you want those people to then be repeat customers and come back when the Revolution hosts the Philadelphia Union or the New York Red Bulls, right? And become Revolution fans. And yeah, man, we could talk about Everett and the possibilities of that going. I think if that happens, the Revolution immediately have a team in Boston or right in the inner city, in the intermetropolitan area. Man, I mean, to the moon, right? And becomes an internationally known team, I think, because it's an international city.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned it. Chicago had to play one of their best games in that moment in the limelight, even if Messi's not on the field.
Yeah.
The New England Revolution are going to have to play their best game if they're going to get their second win of the season. They're
Yeah.
1-6-1 this season. I went down to practice yesterday, talked to Caleb Porter, and he mentioned that they're coming off this 1-0 loss, but in his mind, it was one of the best games they played so far. They put themselves in good positions. Giacomo Veroni had two good opportunities. Nacho Hill had an opportunity. Mark Anthony Kay had an
Yeah.
opportunity. But of course, on the other end of the field, it goes in the back of the net. It's a 1-0 loss. Jake, I'm curious from your perspective, what are you seeing from this New England Revolution side? What did they need to do to get back on track?
Yeah, look, it's been tough, right? I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. They scored 5 goals in 8 games, 4 points in 8 games. It's not a good start. It's difficult to balance CONCACAF Champions Cup with MLS play. Like, historically, everybody has struggled with that, right? Even the Sounders, who won CONCACAF Champions League as it was known then, the only MLS team to do it in its current form. That's also the only season the Sounders have missed the playoffs ever in their history with that regular season, right? It's hard to balance the two. That said, this is obviously a particularly bad start from a results standpoint. I think this game could be coming at a good time because I was actually talking about this with somebody earlier. Like, you know how when there's a derby, right? When Portland plays Seattle or LA plays LAFC or in other sports, Michigan plays Ohio State. The cliche, the Red Sox, Yankees, the cliche is you throw out the records. It doesn't matter in a rivalry game. I kind of feel like when you're playing Inter Miami and Messi, it's kind of the same. You kind of throw out the record and you throw out the form because it's this standalone showcase event and it's different. So if you're New England, you take advantage of this showcase event and you win. And you use that to springboard your way on the rest of the season. There's no doubt this roster has talent, right? I mean, it's largely a similar roster to the team that last year was doing so well. I remember we were coming here in the summer last year, and Taylor Twellman is saying he thinks the Revolution are Cincinnati's biggest threat to the Supporters' Shield at the time. You know, Cincinnati was in the lead, and of course they would win. And look, everything happened with Bruce Arena, and the season just kind of spiraled. But the roster is still pretty much the same from that team that was in second in the East and that were looking like they could really threaten Cincinnati. So it's there. And I think this is the opportunity for them, right? You come, you beat Inter Miami in your home stadium, and you use that to springboard you onto the season because it's a forgiving format. You just got to get up to ninth, right? Like you can start slow. Look at what Kansas City did last year. They started their worst start in their franchise history. The worst 10 game start for a team that ended up making the playoffs. And after 10 games, they were the best team in the West. They ended up upsetting St. Louis in the 8-1 in round one and ending up having a decent year out of it. So that's certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I talked to Nick Lima yesterday, and that's what he mentioned. He mentioned the idea of like this league is kind of crazy that all of a sudden you can be in the bottom and on you're in the playoffs and you have the momentum. And really the goal is always to be you're playing your best soccer at the end of the season. That if you have that momentum going, then maybe you end up being a Sporting KC or he mentioned Austin having something like that in the past as well. You want that momentum towards the end of the season. I'm curious. Yesterday was deadline day. The Revolution made two deadline day moves. They bring in Arriaga from Seattle. They bring in Ivicic. You're probably going to say him better because you know him from the time in Portland Timbers as a goalkeeper who
That was
was a
right.
free agent. All right, I did okay. I
Close to
appreciate
Ali
it.
Agivicic. Yeah.
Okay.
Close enough. For sure. For sure.
And they're also close on a 28-year-old midfielder, Baba. But Porter said
Okay.
yesterday he failed the medical. Those are the moves that he made during that first transfer window. Tell me, like, what do you think of those moves? Do they move the needle for you? Do they help the revolution? What do you make of those moves?
Yeah, look, first of all, Aliage is somebody who I know very well, right? From his time in Portland, from my time in Portland. I thought he had I want to say it was the 2021 season. I thought he was the best goalkeeper in the year of the year in the league. And he actually had my vote for goalkeeper of the year, and that was not being a homer. It was 2022 because it was Steve was in 2021 who also had a great season for the Timbers in 2021. They went to MLS Cup. So the next year, 2022, Aliage is the starter. Maybe he, I would say this. I think he was top three. He should have been top three, not number one, but I think it was probably Petrovic
It was
and
Petrovic.
Blake, Petrovic and Blake, and then Ivicic, I thought was the third best goalkeeper in the league in 2022. He didn't have the same year last year. And then it didn't go well for him at the end. I don't know all the details of the incident or incidents that happened. Clearly, he made some mistakes, and the way he dealt with the situation was not right, and he was essentially sent away from the team, and his time in Portland was done. But always a guy that I found to be incredibly pleasant and incredibly easy to talk to and wonderful to work with. He's competitive as can be. As a goalkeeper, he has a little bit of that, you know, different in him, which most goalkeepers do. But I thought, again, at his best, he was for sure a starter in this league and a top end starter in this league. Can he find that form again? Because he didn't necessarily have it last year, and he was going back and forth with David Bingham, and I don't think that helped him. I think he's the type of guy that needs to kind of have the job. But I liked him a lot and rated him highly, and maybe this fresh start will do him well. But again, he's going to be in a battle, right, with Ravas, and how both of them handle that will be, I think, something to watch. But look, if you're New England, I think it's certainly worth that move. For Arriaga, I mean, look, he's an interesting one, right? Obviously, being up in Seattle, you know, in the pre-Apple days, also very close to him and to that team. He was a starter for them for 2 years, 2021 and 2022, CCL best 11 when they won, as I just mentioned, the CONCACAF Champions League, the only MLS team to do that. And then he was displaced last year by Jackson Rankin, who was great. And it was this emergence for Seattle alongside Yamar. Then this year starts, Seattle's dealing with injuries, and Ryan Schmetzer went with Nathan, the former San Jose center back, over Arriaga. And we're kind of like, all right, he's probably on the way out. But again, from strictly an on-field standpoint, if you're New England, it's kind of like a bargain bin sort of signing of this guy. He's got 20 caps with Ecuador. Like this is a guy who's an experienced international, who's been a starter in this league. Like, why not make that move for a relatively low amount of general allocation money? Same thing with Aliage and bring him in. So to me, it seems like from an on-field perspective, two really shrewd moves for New England, low cost moves for them to improve the roster and improve the depth. But I'm sure, on the other hand, look, if I'm a New England fan, I'm looking at 5 goals scored in 8 games, and I'm saying, where's the attackers, right? Because you sign a center back and a goalkeeper. But on paper, they've got them, right? I mean, the 9 is a question and is an issue. And since Buxa, right, is an issue. But with Sean Kalai, with Carlos Heal, with Nacho Heal, with Esmir Bayraktarevic, with Dylan Barrero coming back, and if he can get back to where he was before his injury, like, you're good in the attack on paper. Theoretically, it's about it all coming together and getting Vrioni or whoever it will be scoring at the 9.
Yeah, I think when I look at those moves, Ivicic, I think that makes sense because Ravas has been kind of shaky this season, especially coming off of his line. And there was actually a moment where Porter's talking about, I don't know, it could be Earl Edwards or it could be Ravas. But obviously, Earl Edwards didn't really take much of his opportunity, according to Porter. Right. So they bring in someone who was a starter, who in 2022 led the league in saves. That's a kind of a move there. I'm curious with Arriaga, when we look at this back line, actually for both players, because you know them well, this back line, we see that Porter wants to play with the ball. He wants to move it from west, left to right. He wants to play out of the back a little bit. Are Arriaga and Ivicic, are they players that can do those types of things?
Well, I'll start with Aliaz first. That was when the Timbers signed him, that was what the word was this is a modern goalkeeper. This is a player who's so good with the ball at his feet. He is, for us, going to be like that evolution of a goalkeeper who's a great shot stopper, but also can be part of the buildup and the attack. So he he's very confident with the ball at his feet. We saw that. I'm kind of old school in the sense of, like, first and foremost, I want my goalkeeper to make great saves. I mean, look at Matt Turner and Georgi Petrovic. New England had arguably the two best goalkeepers of the decade in MLS. Throw Andre Blake in there as well. Two of the three. Two guys that so overperformed is the wrong word, but saved, you know, so many, overperformed the average, right? Overperformed the mean to the sense that elevated New England, I think, maybe in a way that was not necessarily false, but in a way that I don't think they got enough credit for. I don't think that the contributions of Turner and Petrovic got enough credit in New England's success over the past several years. Aliash can be that goalkeeper too, though. I mean, in 2022, he made some of the best saves that we've seen. He was good with the ball at his feet, and he was a great shot stopper. So for him, I think that's something that he'll be confident in and will add to it. Arriaga, theoretically, though, man, I mean, he's coming off of a huge mistake this past weekend where he essentially just dribbles the ball into trouble, gets taken off him, goal the other way, and what was his kind of last moment as a Seattle Sounder. So where's his confidence at? We'll see. But it, to me, it's still kind of a depth play at that center back position. But I think he's a guy who wants to be that type of player, right? And play on the ball and will be comfortable at least trying to play that style.
The Revolution also have another window coming up. All of MLS has another window coming up. Not until the summer, of course. Porter mentioned yesterday, he thinks the team will make between 3 and 5 additions during that next transfer window. When you look at this team, you mentioned the attacking end maybe a little bit. Where else might you want to potentially bring in some bodies, especially if you're thinking about 3 to 5?
Yeah, look, I think the not for me, the 9 is the most important position on New England right now, right? And I think it has been since Adam Buksa departed, and maybe they look at Adam Buksa bringing him back. I mean, but I think Rioni, by the summer, it's enough time, right? And he's got to be scoring performing like a DP number 9 is in this league, I think, for New England to feel okay in that position. And if he's not, I think if you're New England, you've got to think about bringing somebody else in that spot, because in this league, you've got to get production out of your DP number 9. You know, Shankalai played the false 9 a little bit to begin the year. Maybe it was even more dangerous, right? So the Vrioni question, right? Can he get to his potential? I think shapes what they do in the summer. And there's only a couple months left to figure that out. Again, like they're on paper, you got one of the best 10s in the league, Carlos Hill. You don't need to do anything there. If Barrero comes back with Barrero and Shankalai, if that's the way you want to go on the wings, that's really good and that's really dangerous. And then you've got depth with Nacho Heal and Esmir Bayraktarevich. So I think you're good there. There's depth in the midfield as well, right? With Polster and Harks and Buck and Marc-Anthony Kay. Like that's I look at that. I'm like, that's a good foursome. That's a good quartet to have for an MLS team to pick from on a given week. But is Caleb Porter going to find the duo there if he wants to stay in the 4-2-3-1, which he's pretty much played his entire time, and settle on it and guys that fit his style and what he wants. It's interesting, right? Because on paper, I think the roster is pretty good. Outside back, maybe you increase the depth there, I think would make sense. You know, with Brandon Bye's injury, I think that's maybe exposed the lack of depth on the back line a little bit, with Jones and with Bye. I think New England had arguably the best outside back pairing in the league. Certainly they're in the conversation for it. But now with Bye's injury, you know, maybe you're exposed a little bit there. So maybe adding outside back depth and the 9, I think, is where I'm focused on it. And maybe goalkeeper as well, though we're hoping, I think, bringing in Ivicic, that between the 3, somebody emerges as a locked-in starter by the summer.
Yeah, you mentioned it there. There's a lot of bodies, right? There's a lot of center backs right now. Now you bring in Arriaga. There's the center midfielders. Caleb Porter seemed to indicate that he is still going to continue to look for a center midfielder during the next transfer window. Yeah. So when you look at these bodies that, especially in the middle of the field, where do you, so I can kind of go with mine first, if you'd like. You know, I really look at, you know, Matt Polster, and I think Matt Polster and Ian Harks are probably your starting duo. Okay. I think Noel Buck did pretty well this past weekend, comes out in the 44th minute. He's day to day, week to week right now with his, you know, slight quad injury. But to me, those are the guys that you're looking at there. Center back is interesting because they go with Andrew Farrow and they go with Henry Kessler last week. We hear rumors from Tom Bogart of The Athletic that maybe Dave Romney is on the trade block. Maybe they're potentially going to move him out. Someone who played a lot, every minute, I believe, last year was the team MVP when it comes to the defensive work. You know, so I think back there, you're looking at Kessler, you're looking at Mitt Romney, because he's left-footed, but also Andrew Farrell factoring in there, or Yarga factoring in there. To you, what do you think? In those central positions, and then do you potentially move on from someone because you have a new coach that's coming in, maybe playing a new different style?
Yeah, look, Dave Romney was the only field player in MLS to play every minute last year. When I sat down with Bruce Arena in the preseason last year, before they played Orlando, Bruce praised Romney and was like, I didn't know how good he was. Like, well, obviously he had him in LA, but then he went away and he's like, yeah, I didn't realize, you know, how, like having him here, like how good he, to me, he's the best defender in the league, right? then before we did the Atlanta game earlier this year, Caleb said, like, had similar comments to us about both Romney and Polster. He said those were the standouts, and you know them, and then you're with them every day, and you see how good they are. That was a month and a half ago, right? And so I was been a little surprised to see the reports from Tom Bogert, and of course to see Dave Romney on the bench last week. I think the answer to your question in the end is, do you move on from? I think if it's still going this way, you have to, right? I mean, you have to make changes, and it doesn't mean that the players that are out and are, you know, are in are bad players, and they might be able to thrive in other places and contribute for other teams and other systems, but it might just be not working in this situation. And I think it's too early, despite 4 points in 8 games, which is not good. It's too early to say now it's not working, but by the summer, it wouldn't be too early, right? If it's still going that way. And so, yeah, I think certainly you'd have to move on. And Mark Anthony Kay is an interesting one to me, because Mark Anthony Kay, I mean, you know, when he was part of those LAFC teams, with Bob Bradley, they were so good, and he was playing so confidently. And he's, you know, he's with the Canadian national team. He's a starter with the Canadian national team. And now he keeps getting traded. I mean, he's been traded mid-season 3 years in a row, from LAFC to Colorado, from Colorado to Toronto, from Toronto to New England. And like, he seems like a great guy and a leader in the locker room. I look at that, and one, that's showing, okay, there's other teams in the league that value him, that want him, so that's positive. But on the other hand, it's 3 years in a row that a team mid-season has thought that they can improve by making that deal. That's interesting to me, right? Because again, I thought he was so good for LAFC and such an important part of that LAFC juggernaut, right? At the of the Bob Bradley tenure. So yeah, but you know, to your point, right? I mean, you're even saying you think it's Ian and Matt is the best, you know, and you didn't even bring up Mark Anthony Kay in that discussion, right? So interesting to see there. And look, maybe that's somebody who has value on the trade market in MLS. And once again, right, he gets moved mid-season and he can get into a better spot for him, and New England can use that to change things up and maybe improve.
Yeah, and I think just to a couple of the points that you made, you look at someone like Diego Fagundes, who left New England and, you know, did some stuff with Austin, has done some stuff with the Galaxy. You know, sometimes it works out to leave, sometimes it doesn't work out to leave, but there's opportunities. Like, you know, at the end of his tenure, he was no longer playing in New England, right? Somebody else is potentially going to value him. And I think when you look at this New England Revolution side, you also have to potentially think about who has value if you're going to trade someone. So like you mentioned, Dave Romney, like someone who played every minute last year, someone who is steady, who can be in the back line. Maybe you have to, if you're going to potentially bring in other pieces, maybe that's someone who has value versus someone else who doesn't have as much value. So it's an interesting game you have to play as the sporting director, the head coach. Who do you keep? Who do you not? Especially as you bring in a new vision for the club.
Exactly, right? That's the thing on the trade market. You got to give something to get something, right? And the less that, and you know, unless you know something that another team doesn't, right? And you can convince somebody that this piece that you have that you don't rate at all, right, is really worth a lot. Another team rates them highly. But for the most part, everybody's pretty smart. And yeah, if you want to get something of value back, you've got to trade something of value. But if you're in a situation like New England is, and it continues this way, then you just might have to change it, right? You might have to change things up.
Now, the last thing I'll say on that, and we'll wrap up, is this idea that, you know, if this is the roster that you have until the summer to kind of figure things out and put pieces together. And you look at someone like Noel Buck started the first two regular season games and then only had 128 regular season minutes until this past weekend. So he only had 6 extra minutes in the games that were after those first two games until he started again. So there's always potential to work your way back in, to have those conversations. So the New England Revolution have to figure things out. And that's the job of Caleb Porter. That's the job of Kurt Anofo. And the hope is that it starts this weekend when Lionel Messi potentially comes to town, when Inter Miami potentially come to town, well, they will come to town. And certainly Jake Zivin and Taylor Twellman will come to town. Jake, so much appreciation for you for stopping by and having a conversation with us today.
Happy to come by. Can't wait to get to Gillette, see what it's like with this type of environment, with Miami coming to town, which should be a great game. I think New England will be up for it. They have to be up for it. Miami always brings it. Can't wait to get to Gillette with Taylor. And hopefully call a great game on Saturday.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Jake Zivin of Apple TV for joining us today. And thank you to Seth Maycomber of The Blazing Musket for that interview. Make sure you are subscribed to The Blazing Musket to keep up to date on all of the news happening with the New England Revolution. And thank you to Andy Judd of Boston Sports Nation. Make sure you are reading his work throughout the week at Boston Sports Nation. And we also wanted to send a thank you to our presenting sponsor, Bet Online. And we will have a new episode for you following this weekend's match against Inter Miami. But until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.